The following is a home program on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 4, text number 2, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on January 9th, 2010, in Auckland, New Zealand.
So tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translated and purported by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tirthankara Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, chapter number 4, text number 2. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Evam parampara praptam idam imam raja rishaya vidu sa kalena iha mahata yoga nashta parantapa evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidu sakaleneha mahata yoga nashta parantapa evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidu sakaleneha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. Purport. It is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings, because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly, Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demonic persons, who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of the unscrupulous commentators, there arose the need to re-establish the disciplic succession. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord Himself that the disciplic succession was broken, and therefore He declared that the purpose of the Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment also, there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to authorized disciplic succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, although they make a good business on the words of Sri Krishna. This spirit is demonic, because demons do not believe in God, but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English, as it is received by the Parampara, the Siddhic succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity. But if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time. Vandeham Shri Guru.
Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Zavadutam Parijana Zaitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakonvitamscha.
So, what does this material world do? It distorts the truth. Even 5,000 years ago, what does that mean? It was the Dvapara Yuga. It wasn't even the Kali Yuga. And the message has become distorted. So we can imagine if even in the Dvapara Yuga, which was a very pious age compared to the Kali Yuga, if even in the Dvapara Yuga, you see, there was so much distortion that Krishna had to again repeat Bhagavad Gita. How much distortion there must be in this Kali Yuga, you see. It is completely distorted. Krishna says, surrender to me. And the commentator says, not to Krishna. Don't surrender to Krishna. Surrender to the unborn, unmanifest that is within Krishna and within you and within me. You see? And the commentators say, this is a very popular edition, Bhagavad Gita. Dr. Radhakrishnan's Bhagavad Gita. Very popular edition, you see. I was one time visiting with a professor of religion at the prestigious university in the United States, Rice University in Houston, Texas. And the professor was asking, why you need this other edition? Why as it is? He was thinking they're all as it is, you see. So I said, well, just hand me that. I just randomly pointed him one of the Gitas he had in his book. Hand me that Bhagavad Gita. And I pull it out, I turn to chapter 9, text 34, to see how it had been translated. Now you know how the verse goes, you know, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Majaji Mang Namaskaru Mam Vashashi Yukta Vaivang Atmanang Matparayanaha. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, offer obeisances and worship me, being completely absorbed in me. Surely you will come to me. You know that verse. So here's how it was translated. It sounded almost the same. I mean, engage your mind always in thinking of me. Offer obeisances and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, certainly you will become me. Just see the rascal commentator. Certainly you become me. And they call this a commentary in the Bhagavad Gita. This is their own philosophy. You see, they have their own agenda, and they use the Bhagavad Gita to promote their own agenda. Prabhupada gives a very graphic example, which most people are not familiar with it, but people who went through the counterculture back in the 60s in the U.S. can understand this example of Prabhupada very well. In the U.S., smoking marijuana is illegal. See, you can be arrested. So, but what happens if you smoke marijuana? You get a certain type of stain on your fingers, marijuana stain. Someone who smokes it, they get these marijuana stains, you see. So if the police come into the house to raid and look for marijuana smokers, you don't want to have marijuana stains on your hand because then they'll look through your underwear and everywhere. see if they can find some marijuana. So, and this, one man, when he smokes marijuana, he says, "Here, let me smoke it from your hand. You hold the marijuana cigarette in your hand, and I'll smoke it. That way he doesn't get any stains on his hands." So Prabhupada said, if you want to smoke marijuana, smoke with your own. This is an example, understand. We're against marijuana. It's just an example. He says, if you want to smoke marijuana, smoke with your own hand. Don't smoke with somebody else's hand. That was the example that Prabhupada used. So the point is, if you want to present your own philosophy, just say, this is my own philosophy. Don't say, this is Bhagavad Gita. And now, you know, see, if you want to present your own philosophy, just honestly do it. Well, I think we're all God, and, you know, I'm going to give you a mantra, and you can become God in 6 months. Just give me $5,000 for the mantra, you see. You should just, but don't do it in the name of Bhagavad Gita, you see. That's the point. If you want to try to invent your own rubbish, just do it in the name, in your own name. Don't do it in the name of Krishna. It's very offensive to do it in the name of Krishna. So anyway, they have greatly distorted it, as this we found in that edition. And so Prabhupada is very kindly given us this wonderful, wonderful edition, describing how this science has been very carefully handed down from master to disciple. You see, the one who is now the disciple, Prabhupada says, he becomes the next spiritual master. This is called the disciplic succession. It's handed down. The master takes disciple, that disciple becomes a master who takes a disciple, who then becomes a master who takes a disciple. In this way, it comes down. Prabhupada told us, he said that, he says, I am the 11th in the line. My Guru Maharaj is the 10th in the line from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I am the 11th, and you all, he said to his disciples, you are the 12th. So these Ritvik people, they say that, you know, no, the disciplic succession ended with Prabhupada, you see. That was the final, it was a stop there. Even though it's been going on for thousands of years since the beginning of the universe, Prabhupada wanted it to end with him and he'd be the final acharya in the line of succession. But that's not what Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said, I am the 11th and you, my disciples, you are the 12th. Any of you that strictly follow my instructions, you become acharyas also, number 12 in the line. See, there's many, of course, there's many Prabhupada disciples who are gurus. That means they're sharing position number 12. We're all sharing position number 12. So it's a very important principle, disciplic succession. Some people say, why can't you just go straight to Krishna? Why do you have to go through an intermediary, you see? In fact, that even happened. There was one in the early days in San Francisco temple, there was one devotee. He was very upset that he had to go through an intermediary. And he was actually sobbing. He came up and Prabhupada actually put the boy's head on his lap. He was patting him on the head. That's all right, my dear boy. The boy was sobbing and crying that he didn't want to go through an intermediary. But then he finally just, he got up and just left and never came back because he just couldn't accept the principle of going through an intermediary. But do we really accept Krishna? That's the real point. Do we really accept Krishna or not? Krishna explains in the Adi Purana to Arjuna. He says, Ye me bhakta jana parita, na me bhaktas chite janaha. Ye me bhaktanam chite, what is it? I forgot the second half, let's see. Ye me bhakta jana paratha, na me bhakta stache janaha, mad bhaktanam chaye bhakta, te me bhakta tamamata. Yes. He says that one who is my devotee, ye me bhakta jana paratha, O son of Pritha, the one who is my devotee, na me bhakta stache janaha. He's not my devotee. But the one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So it's not a question of intermediary, it's a question of do we accept Krishna? That's the real point. If I truly accept Krishna as my authority, as my Lord, as my authority, as the final word on what's right and what's wrong, then I can't argue with him when he says I have to become the devotee of his devotee. That would be foolish. Well, Krishna, I accept you as my Lord. You are my master, and now you're telling me to take a guru who's your representative? Krishna, I don't want you to tell me that. I just want you to tell me to take you only as my guru and nobody else. You see, that's not surrender. Surrender means whatever Krishna says. My Lord, I accept whatever you say. All right, become the devotee of my devotee. You see. All right, Krishna, who should I accept? You see. So if we really want to be devotees of Krishna, we cannot reject this disciplic succession system. It is coming from Krishna, you see. It is Krishna's. And you may say, well, why is Krishna doing this? I mean, he could expand himself into millions and billions of forms and actually be, you know, if we could have a Krishna in every town and village to be the guru of that village. Why Krishna is engaging his devotees in being spiritual masters? Why doesn't he just be, you know, manifest himself into millions and billions of forms and be the spiritual master? Well, Prabhupada answers that question very nicely in the third canto purport of the Bhagavatam. Krishna prefers to see that his devotee is the hero of some episode of which he himself is the actual doer. And Arjuna is the classic example. Because Krishna says in the Gita, actually, I've already killed all the enemies. But I want you, Arjuna, to go forward and fight the battle so you get credit. In other words, Krishna, actually, all the credit goes to Krishna. He's doing everything. But you know what? He doesn't like the credit. He'd rather see his devotees get the credit. So he empowers his devotees to act on his behalf, to do all kinds of things. Arjuna, Hanuman, you see. Some Prabhupada spreading Krishna consciousness all over the... Lord Chaitanya could have done that. He could have spread the movement all over. Why he didn't do that? Because he wanted... Prabhupada said that. Lord Chaitanya wanted me to get the credit for having done it. So Krishna wants his devotees to become glorified and worshipped. That gives him more pleasure than if he himself is worshipped. You see. Krishna is not a glory hound. He likes to see his devotees are worshipped and honored. So therefore, this system of disciplic succession is there to very carefully hand down this knowledge all the way down the line of disciplic succession. Some people are bewildered. They say, well, I mean, this is going on for so many years, and how, with this short of a list, you could possibly cover so many years. Some people say, well, it's 5,000 years old, but actually, this list we have here on page 32 is not 5,000 years old. It's 155 trillion years old. That's how far back it goes. 155, that's the age, that's how far we've been living in this universe. It actually goes back 155 trillion years. So how do 32 people possibly span 155 trillion years? People wonder. Well, the answer is simple. Brahma is still living. He was given the knowledge 155 trillion years ago. Narada Muni is still living. And they live a very long time. And then Vyasadeva is also still living. He was given this knowledge from Narada Muni. Actually, it's described that Vyasadeva is still living in the Himalayas. Of course, we're not empowered to see him, but actually, he is there and is still living in the Himalayas. Prabhupada confirms in his purport. So Madhva, a few centuries ago, Madhva, who's famous as Madhvacharya, he went there to Himalayas and met Srila Vyasadeva. So that's how the big gap is spanned between here and Vyasadeva and between Vyasadeva and Krishna. Because Vyasadeva is still residing in the Himalayas. Madhva went there and met him. And now, so if you take the dates on Madhvacharya, how long he's been preaching, then it makes sense between position 5 and position 32. But yeah, it's reasonable. It's not some unreasonable thing. It's completely reasonable. You can actually research and find, you know, about all these different personalities in the list. That research can be done. And you can see how sublime this, you know, disciplic succession actually is. So in this way, we need to put our faith in this wonderful system that Krishna has given us. Not blind faith. but intelligent faith. Sometimes people criticize, well, you know, you Hare Krishnas, you just have blind faith, it's really no good. Because, you know, you're not scientific, we believe in the scientists, we don't believe in blind faith. But there's a fallacy there. I'll show you what the fallacy is and their reasoning. Their contention is, they base their modern empirical science on this premise that unless something can be empirically verifiable, it has no objective reality. You see, that's their premise on which they base modern science. But let me ask you, is that premise empirically verifiable? You understand? The whole basis of modern-day empirical science is that unless something is empirically verifiable, unless you can see it, touch it, taste it, smell it, actually experience it with your senses empirically, it has no it's not real. It has no objective reality. That's why they say there is no God, because we can't see him, we can't taste him, we have no direct sensual experience of him. So they base their empirical science on this premise that unless something is empirically verifiable, it has no objective reality. But they can't prove empirically the truth of this statement. There is no empirical proof for that. Can you prove that something, just because you can't see something, it doesn't exist? You know they have special dog whistles that have a very high frequency the human ear cannot hear? You can blow that whistle at 3 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning to call your dog and it won't wake up your neighbors because the dog will hear it and you won't, and then your neighbors won't hear it either. They have special high frequency whistles that only a dog's ear can pick up. A human ear cannot hear them. So, and there's also different types of rays, you see, that we can't see with our eyes, but instruments can pick them up. Different types of light. So, the point is, our senses are very, very limited. What we can perceive with our senses is very limited. And if you want to base your conception of reality on these limited senses, then you have a very, very limited vision of reality, you see. Very limited. So we don't constrict ourselves to the blind faith of the scientists who say that unless something is empirically verifiable, it has no objective reality. We don't constrict ourselves like that. It's like tying yourself up in a box, you know. They're constricting themselves intellectually, philosophically, and scientifically. The real fact is that truth exists, and truth is not limited by us. The truth can be revealed in any way, empirically or non-empirically. It's not restricted. Well, unless you conform to our normal sensual system of experiencing reality, we can't accept that it's true. But what if there's some other ability, you see, what if there's such a thing as spiritual senses, which can be turned on, just like you got a dog, he can hear on the higher frequency, you see. What if there's some higher level senses that can be turned on in a human being, so he can actually directly see God face to face, you see. And you can actually get those turned on. And you can actually see God face to face. That is also scientific, because you're directly seeing God with your spiritual eyes. So the fact is, we do have such higher level senses, spiritual senses. That's a fact. Just because they're not turned on right now doesn't mean they don't exist. You see. So through this parampara system, coming down from Krishna, from all these great acharyas, we are getting information of how to turn on those spiritual senses and actually experience reality through those spiritual senses. Premanjana charita bhakti valochanena santaksa deva hridayeshu valokayanti yang shama shundaram achintya gunasva rupam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. when your eyes become anointed, when your material eyes, you see, become anointed with the salve of love of God, then your spiritual eyes become turned on. And you can see Krishna face to face. So, it's not that a devotee has blind faith, actually. He simply has higher level instruments than the scientists have. You see, they use their microscopes, their telescopes, thisoscopes, thatoscopes, you see, to see what the layman cannot see. And we are very proud, we are scientists, we can see so many things the layman cannot see. But the devotee, he's even more advanced scientist. He has even more powerful instruments, you see, than the scientists do. Coming from God, you see. He turns on the spiritual senses, where he can perceive God in everywhere and everything. Yomang pashyati sarvachat sarvang chamai pashyati tashahang na pranashyami sachami na pranashyati. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text number 30. Krishna says, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I'm never lost, never ever lost to me. So Krishna, through this disciplic succession system, through his authorized representative, the bona fide spiritual masters, is giving a system that where you can turn on those spiritual senses that you have, each one of you, each one of us, we have these spiritual senses. And through this authorized bhakti yoga system, those senses can be turned on. Just like someone said, well, it's just faith, you know, that Krishna takes the offerings. We make, you know, we bow down before the deities, we make the offering. It's just faith. Better not to play with things. Just listen to the lecture. I guarantee you, if you listen, stop playing with them. If you just listen to the lecture, you'll get more nectar. We all want to be happy, right? We want to enjoy, have fun, don't we? I guarantee you, if you will learn to tune into these lectures, fine-tune your consciousness to hear every word carefully that's being spoken and not let your mind wander to this thing and that thing, you'll have more fun than if you play around with something and divert your mind somewhere else from the lecture. I promise you, you just try it and you'll like it. The fact is that there's a playground within your heart. You like playgrounds? There's a playground within your heart, and if you will hear carefully, you'll be able to enter into that playground. And Krishna is in there. You can play with Krishna in the Vrindavan forest. So listen very carefully and learn how to really enjoy life, you see. We're going to take you to the ultimate enjoyment. You've got to hear carefully and not let your mind go wandering here and there, okay? Very good. So, this process turns on those higher level senses to where you can directly see the Supreme Lord. As I was giving the example, Prabhupada, you know, that people say, well, how do you know it's Krishna's really taking it? It's just faith, you know. You don't see that Krishna's taking the offering. Prabhupada said, I can see that he's taking the offering. You see, Prabhupada could see actually how Krishna is taking the offering. And sometimes even the common people can see how the deity is doing things. You know that Sakshi Gopal story? Everyone knows that Sakshi Gopal story? Very nice story. You know the Sakshi Gopal story? Do you know that story, Sakshi Gopal? It's a very nice story. I'll tell you that story. So, when we go to Vrindavan, we get on the airplane, you know, we fly to Delhi, take a taxi. In the old days, when they went on pilgrimage, they didn't have airplane and taxi and bus and automobile or even bicycle. They were walking. They would walk all the way across India to go on pilgrimage, you see. So this from South India, this old man, Brahmana, he's going all the way to Vrindavan in North India. Can you imagine walking all the way to Vrindavan? Ooh, it's a long walk. But it is a young Brahmin from the same village, and he was helping the old man, you see. The two were going all the way for many days and weeks, walking, walking, walking. So that old man, Brahmana, he's so indebted to this young Brahmana that he's helped me come all the way to Vrindavan. So they got to Vrindavan, they went before the deity of Gopal. and beautiful, wonderful deity. And the old Brahmin, he says, I feel so indebted to you. When we get back to our village, I'm going to give you my daughter in marriage. You've done such nice service. I'm going to give you my daughter in marriage, you see. So the young Brahmin, he was very smart. He said, you know, there's so much caste consciousness in our village. I'm from a lower caste of Brahmins. And it will cause complete uproar in the village. Don't promise me like that. Please don't do that. It'll create hell in the village. All hell will break loose in the village if you try to offer your daughter to me in marriage. I appreciate it, but all hell will break loose in our village when we get back. So don't do that. He said, no. I'm so indebted to you. I don't care. In front of the deity, I'm making this promise. I offer you my daughter in marriage. Now the deity is witness. I've made this promise, you see. See, in India, even in the modern days, if there's some dispute, they will go in front of the deities because nobody will lie in front of the deities. They don't dare lie in front of the deities. They don't want to get, you know, the deity to do something to them for lying. So he made the promise in front of the deities. The young Brahmin said, well, all right, Krishna. And so they walked all the way back to the village, weeks and weeks, traveling. And they got there, and the old Brahmin said, you know, his wife, I've offered our daughter to this young Brahmin in marriage. He served me so long. She said, what? I'm going to commit suicide. You can't do this. This is completely, she completely went berserk. The idea of marrying her daughter to this lower caste Brahmin, you see. And then the brother, he was the worst. He was an atheist. He went out into the marketplace and he said, I want to announce to everyone this young Brahmin, he has gone with my father to Vrindavan and he has given him drugs. And he is making a false story that he's offering my sister to this young Brahmin in marriage. So he made a big uproar in the marketplace. It was creating a big controversy in the village, you see. So what to do, you know? The young Brahmin was right. Yeah, but he felt he had an obligation, so there would be no offense to the deity, you see. He felt obliged that we have to honor the promise because it was made in front of the deity. So Krishna within the heart gave the young Brahmin a very good idea. He negotiated with that atheistic brother. He said this, that if the deity will come as witness that this promise was made, will you agree to the marriage? And the brother said, he knew it was a big deity, it wasn't possible to move the deity, huge, heavy deity. And he knew the deity, there'd be no way they could get the deity down here to South India. He said, yeah, sure. Ha, ha, ha. So that young Brahmana, again, he got on the road and he walked all the way to North India. I mean, how many months this took, this whole Leela, it's amazing. He finally went to the Vrindavan, he went to the temple in front of Gopal, and he said, my dear Lord, this promise has been made, and now I'm asking you to come as a witness that this promise was made in your presence, because all hell is broken loose in the village, and this promise has to be honored, my Lord, otherwise the old Brahmin will suffer a very bad reaction. So please, my dear Lord, come and bear witness. So the deity said, what are you talking about? I can't move. I'm a stone statue. I can't go anywhere. And this young Brahmin is very clever. Prabhupada actually said he defeated Krishna by logic. He said, my Lord, if you can talk with me, you can walk with me. So the deity was defeated. I don't know if he went like this, but anyway, the deity agreed. He said, but on one condition, you do not turn around to look at me. You just have faith that I'm walking behind you. But you will know I'm there because of the sound of the ankle bells. You will always know. You will hear that ting, ting, you see, as you're walking for many months across India. So sure enough, day after day, week after week, he wouldn't turn around. He disciplined himself very carefully not to turn his head around. And he just heard that little ting, ting, ting. And he knew, oh, the deity is behind me. But they got right to the edge of the village, about 1 kilometer away, you see. And there was no... All of a sudden, the bell stopped. Oh, my goodness, what happened? There's no bell. And he just turned around. He couldn't control himself. And there was the deity standing there, and he wouldn't move any further, you see. He wouldn't walk any further. So he ran into the village, Gopala's come, Gopala's come, Gopala's come to witness. So everyone came up there. They actually built a temple around the deity up there, and the marriage took place, and, you know, everything worked out fine. So the deity is real. The deity can talk and the deity can walk, but you have to become purified, you see. This is not some blind faith. There's another pastime that I told just the other day, but none of you all heard that. During Chaitanya Leela, there was one devotee, his name was Goridas Pandit. And he, can you imagine how fortunate was this Goridas Pandit? Nittai and Gauranga themselves personally came to have prasadam in his home. Can you imagine having Nittai and Gauranga in your home? So anyway, he had Nittai Gaurdeities like you have here on the altar. And so he was doubly blessed. He had the deities and he had the lords themselves eating, you see. So after they finished prasad, they were getting up to leave. He said, "My dear Lord, I cannot bear the pain of your separation. Please do not leave." And they said, "But don't you see we're on the altar? We're not leaving." He said, "But my Lord, those are deities. I want you personally to stay." And they said, "Oh, okay." So the deities came to life. And the Gornitai went and got on the altar and froze as deities. And then the Gornitai who had been on the altar as deities were walking out of the house. And he said, "My dear Lord, I cannot bear your separation. Please stay, please stay, please." He said, "Don't you see we're on the altar? We're not going to leave." He said, "My Lord, I want you to stay personally." He said, "Oh, okay." They went back up on the altar. They froze as deities. And then the Gornitai came off and went back and forth until he couldn't lose. He completely lost track of which was the ones who he invited for dinner and which ones the ones that were on the altar. So actually, these things are very real, but one simply has to become purified to be able to see these things, you see. We have the spiritual senses that we can directly perceive God. We can see how the deity is eating, everything we can perceive. But it simply requires turning on those senses, you see, getting them turned on. It's like you may buy a mobile phone, but it's locked. You can only use one kind of SIM card in it, you see, because it's a locked mobile phone. But there's a process of unlocking that mobile phone where you can put any SIM card in it, you see. So right now, we're locked. Our consciousness is locked with a material SIM card. You understand? And if we go through the proper system, we can unlock our senses and put a transcendental SIM card in there and see Krishna face to face. So Krishna consciousness is the process of unlocking the mobile phone of your consciousness. So you can put a transcendental SIM card into your consciousness, so to speak. You understand the point? So someone may say, "But I don't believe you can really unlock your mobile phone and use any SIM card anywhere in the world in your mobile phone." But that means you just don't know, just because you haven't experienced it. But those who have gotten their mobile phones unlocked and who do travel around the world and can put any SIM card they want into their mobile phone, they know it's real, you see. So those who have actually purified their senses to where they can see Krishna face to face, eye to eye at every moment, they know it's real, it's not faith. They know it's not blind faith. They can directly see Krishna. So Prabhupada had that conviction. He had that experience. And now we are taking advantage of this wonderful information, this wonderful system given to us by Prabhupada, so that we can also unlock our consciousness too. Be able to put in that transcendental SIM card and see Krishna face to face. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Everybody ready to get unlocked? Have your consciousness get a transcendental SIM card to be able to see Krishna? That's what we're giving you in this Krishna consciousness movement. We're unlocking the mobile phone of your consciousness so you can have that transcendental SIM card. Any questions? You can always write. Actually, we don't have paper, but I prefer to have questions written down. And oh, good. But I should have been passed out earlier. I should have mentioned it. But yeah. Anyone who has a question, write it down on the piece of paper. She'll give you the paper. Nobody's having any questions, it looks like. We encourage the questions very much because it's the order of Krishna. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatpadarshinaha. By asking questions, you're obeying the order of Krishna because he says, just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master, inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. So if you don't inquire, you're disobeying Krishna's order. So Krishna, I'm just trying to encourage you. Krishna is directly ordering you should inquire. It's his order. You should inquire from the spiritual master. Prabhupada said, don't be dull-headed. This inquiry is very good. It means your intelligence becomes activated. It's unlocking the mobile phone of your consciousness by inquiring. This will speed up your spiritual advancement by asking relevant questions. So everybody be encouraged to ask questions. Yeah.
You talked about deity is none different from Krishna.
About what?
Deity. Krishna, deity form.
Deity, yes.
So, that means when we have the deity, that's when we have to take care of the deity the same as a person or what? How?
So, if you have deity, should you teach the deity like a stone statue? Or should you treat the deity like a person? This is why, when my disciples ask me if they can get deities, I don't just say, oh yes, that's great. I don't do that. I'm very particular, because unless they can actually treat the deity as a person, just like if you have a baby, you know, a husband and wife get together and plan to have a baby, then they take so much care for the child. They have to bathe it, they have to clothe it, they have to feed it, they have to educate the child. It's a whole lifetime of service, isn't it, having a child? So deity means you're inviting it, you're trying to bring a child into your own. Krishna is in the mood of a child, is coming to receive your service. You bathe him every day, you dress him, you feed him. In this way, the deity has to be taken. Otherwise, it's better if one is not prepared to serve the deity like that as a person in your home. It's better just to keep photograph. If one wants to have a deity but cannot do strictly everything, then you could have Gornatai deity, because they'll overlook all the offenses. As long as you're having kirtan, they'll overlook the offenses. But if you want to have anything besides Gornatai, especially Radha Krishna, then you should be initiated and have your spiritual master's permission. Because unless you can actually give full service to the deity, there are what's called seva aparads, which will hinder you on your pathway. Let's see, why do we need... Maybe you can help me read this.
Even I can read this, I have.
I think the question is, why do we wear gopi chandan?
Why do we wear gopi chandana? You mean the tilak?
Yes.
Actually, the gopi chandana is sacred. This is sacred clay. In the beginning days of ISKCON, we didn't have any clay from India. We used to go to get what's called fuller's earth. It wasn't very nice, but in the early part of ISKCON, no one was going to India to bring anything back. We used to use, Prabhupada told us to use fuller's earth, which is something they use in arts and crafts or something. I don't know how they use it. But this clay we have is sacred clay. They say that it comes from the place where there's some pastime of the gopis in Dwarka. Whether that's true or not, I'm not sure, but it is accepted as sacred clay. I know one time Prabhupada, I read in the Veda base, he was mentioning, it's said that the gopis, that place where they get, there's a pastime of the gopis in that place where they get the gopi chandana. Whether that's true or not, it wasn't clear, and the Prabhupada was actually confirming that. It's said that that's, But in any case, this is very nice clay. It goes on nicely. And why we wear tilak, that's the other question. Why we wear tilak at all? This tilak marks the body as a temple of God. And someone said, well, why does Krishna wear tilak? I mean, he doesn't need to purify his consciousness. Why does he wear tilak? Well, tilak is really cool, you know. Krishna's the supreme cool. There's nobody more cool. He's the coolest dresser. He does everything in the coolest possible way. So tilak is a very cool thing. And Krishna wears it because it's a super cool thing to do. Okay, let's see. Why do we blow the conch shell before the arti? Actually, the blowing of conch shell means victory. It's like in the Battle of Kurukshetra, battlefield of Kurukshetra. It is victory. It means victory of the spiritual energy is becoming victorious over the material energy. Therefore, we blow the conch shell. Okay, next question. Any philosophical questions or just puja questions? Okay. Oh, good. Here's a philosophical question. Why does Krishna allow us to do sinful activities when he can stop it? Yes. Why do parents give their children freedom? I mean, they could make sure their child is not naughty and never does anything wrong. They could just chain them to their bed and never let the child go anywhere and do anything. Just keep him as a prisoner in his bedroom. Chain him to his bed. And then the child can't ever do anything wrong because he's chained to his bed his whole life. Just keep. Would you like to be chained to your bed? No. It wouldn't be very fun, would it? So yeah, we could just chain your kid to his bed and let him live there his whole life, chained to his bed, and that way he'll never do anything wrong. He won't be able to sin because he's chained to his bed. But what kind of relationship would you have with that child? What kind of, could he feel any love for the parent? No, it'd be a horrible thing. He'd become like a monster in his brain. He'd just become, there's no love. If you treat someone like that, there's no love. So Krishna doesn't chain us. He gives us the freedom to act in accordance with his desires or out of accordance with his desires, because that's the only way that love can actually develop. You can't love someone who is forcing you like a prisoner. You can only love someone who gives you their love unconditionally. Krishna is unconditionally giving us his love. Whether we love him in return or not, it doesn't matter to him. He still gives us his love. So that's why Krishna doesn't come in by force and stop us from doing sinful actions. He wants us to do it voluntarily. Just imagine if he sent some police from Goloka Vrindavan to, you know, handcuff all of us and take us back in a transcendental paddy wagon, you know, back to Goloka Vrindavan as prisoners. What would be the use? He wants us to come voluntarily on our own, you see. Krishna doesn't want inmates in the spiritual world like a big prison, you know. He wants people who come there because they love Krishna and they want to do what pleases Krishna. That's why he doesn't forcefully stop our sinful activities. The era of Kali Yuga is full of sufferings, and we all want to overcome these sufferings. How can we overcome day-to-day stress and obstacles? Thank you. This is a very good question. Well, when a pilot is flying the airplane and he hits stormy weather, what does he do? He goes to a higher altitude. He gets above the storm, isn't it? So the stress and the obstacles, they are happening within the modes of nature. That's it. If you go higher up, beyond the modes of nature, there's no stress and there's no obstacles. In fact, what appears to be an obstacle within, when you're in the modes, when you get beyond the modes, you realize it was actually a blessing. It was a stepping stone to have you advance, to help you advance even further. That's why Kunti Devi was praying, Vipada Shantutashvat Tatra Tadra Jagangaro Bhavanam Darshanam Machad Bhavanam Darshanam. It's something Darshanam. Forget it. Vipada Shantutashvat Tatra Tatra Jagangaro Bhavanam Darshanam Yachad Apunarbhava Darshanam. Yeah, that's it. By your darshan, there'll be no more repetition of birth and death. The last line. So, Kunti Devi is saying, give me more obstacles because I find they're very advantageous for me. So, I actually gave a seminar at a IT corporation in Pune. I guess it was last year. It was called No Stress Success. I told all the corporate workers how they could have no stress success, stressless success, you see. So it's a matter of elevating your consciousness beyond the modes. Now, how do you do that? Yeah, that's why I recommend 16 quality rounds before you leave the house, on the beads. Get up early in the morning before sunrise, take your bath, chant your Japa Mala, these 16 rounds, quality rounds, go deep into the mantra. Deeply absorb yourself in Hare Krishna, and then when you come out, it'll be a new world. You'll see, when you come out of a deep meditation on the holy names, you'll see Krishna's energy everywhere. When you go to your job, you'll see Krishna's energy. You won't see the material energy. The key is you have to go deep, deep, deep into the mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So that's the key. And then instead of seeing it as an obstacle, you'll see, oh, it is a stepping stone to help me advance even more in Krishna consciousness. So an advanced devotee never feels there's any obstacle. Everything for him is a stepping stone, how to become more and more ecstatic in Krishna consciousness. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? It is. It's actually even better than I can describe it, I can tell you. Okay. What can you say if being a devotee you have to stay with karmis because of some reason? Well, if you can find a way to get out of it, that's best. But if there's absolutely no choice, then you should make them into devotees, if possible. And if that's not possible, then you should become very introspective and spend your time reading and chanting, put your iPod on, keep your headset on, just tune it out and tune into Krishna consciousness if you're stuck in that situation. Maybe you're a student, you're in the dormitory, your roommate's a karmi, she's listening to punk rock music or something all day long, and it's just a horrible atmosphere. Well, you just put on your headset and go into your own world as much as possible. That's what I would say. Okay, what will ensure that the disciplic succession isn't broken again? There's only one way we can ensure that the disciplic succession will not be broken again, and that is we have to become pure devotees. So it's on you, it's on everybody's shoulder. It's your duty to make sure that the disciplic succession doesn't break. Every one of you have that responsibility if you're a true disciple, a true follower of Prabhupada. Everyone's Prabhupada's disciple, either you're a disciple or a grand disciple. Everyone's follower of Prabhupada. So, if you want to keep Prabhupada's legacy alive, then you have to become a pure devotee. That's all. So everybody should strive for purity in their sadhana. And then even if every other devotee blooped, and you were the only Prabhupada Nuga left on the planet, you could keep the thing going pure. That's how pure we should all try to be, each one of us. That if every other ISKCON devotee left the movement, I was the only one left, I could maintain this disciplic succession by my own sadhana. Everyone should try for that level of purity. Okay. Out of all the yogas, bhakti yoga is regarded as the highest. Why are there so many temptations in bhakti yoga then, and how to overcome these? Actually, the temptations are there for everybody, not just the bhakti yogis. Everyone has to face. Everybody is equally being bombarded by temptations. It's not that bhakti yogis get more temptations than others, no. Everybody is getting bombarded with the temptations. That little common Dave, he's flying around and shooting those arrows in everybody's heart, arrows of temptation, you see. That's his job, that's his duty. So the difference is the bhakti yogi, he has an armor he can put on to make his heart arrow-proof. He has the armor of Krishna consciousness to put on his heart. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So why he also has to be subjected to these temptations? Well, it's Maya Devi's job to make sure that no nonsense get into the spiritual world. She wants to make sure that you can pass all the tests. She's the bouncer at the door of the spiritual world. If you try to get in, you're not qualified, she'll bounce you right out. You see, she'll tempt by temptations. It's Maya Devi's job. She's the quality control person as far as who she keeps the riffraff out of the spiritual world. So, you know, it's her job to tempt us. We have to prove that we can't be allured by the temptations. I mean, what's the greatest example? Haridas Thakur, that beautiful young prostitute girl. It wasn't sleazy like the ones today. This was a really beautiful prostitute. She came there and disrobed herself while he was chanting his rounds, begging for sex pleasure. And he said, he tricked her, right, to stay there 3 days and get purified. He said, yeah, okay, young lady, I'll be happy to facilitate, but just let me finish my japa first. And this way he tricked her into staying there for 3 days, coming back in 3 successive nights and becoming a pure devotee herself. So these temptations are there they are tests to help us advance in Krishna consciousness. So don't feel you have to give in to a temptation. See, this is a blessing. This is to help me move to a higher level of Krishna consciousness. This test has come. You see, I had an offer to fall down in a situation where I could fall down from Krishna consciousness, you see. And I said no to Maya, you see. Maya gave me a chance to fall down, and I said no. That means I moved to a higher level of Krishna consciousness. So every time you have a chance to fall down and you say no, then you move up to higher and higher levels of Krishna consciousness. So when temptations come, you know what to say. No. No way, Maya. Not going to get me. How do we preach to impersonalist Sikhs without making them feel we're imposing Bhagavad Gita on them? Well, come on, Guru Nanak read the Bhagavad Gita. Guru Nanak also read Gita. So we have a lot of appreciation for their Guru Nanak. Just start glorifying Guru Nanak. Yes, we like your Guru Nanak very much because he appreciated Bhagavad Gita. Okay. Why does Krishna wear the Vaishnava tilak? I already said. Because it's really cool, it's beautiful. Actually, he wants to be attractive for Radharani, you see. And tilak is very attractive. But don't use it to attract girls. That's not our position. Okay. Who unlocks the spiritual senses? Yes, the spiritual master is the one who does the unlock job for you. They ask, is it the spiritual master? That's right. He's the one who does the unlock job on your consciousness. Please say something about the Lord and devotee relationships. Okay. Something about the Lord. Krishna is so beautiful. Oh, is he beautiful? There's nobody more beautiful than Krishna. And now about devotee relationships. They're also beautiful, if you do them right. Because that's to the extent that you actually develop loving relationships with devotees. Only to that extent can you realize Krishna. Because as I quoted earlier, Krishna says, unless you're a devotee of the devotee, you are not my devotee. So you want to realize and personally experience the beautiful, wonderful qualities of Krishna? You're not going to do it unless you love the Vaishnavas, unless you love the devotees. And that doesn't mean lip service, I love you, I love you. No, that means I'm willing to serve you. That is the real test of love. When I'm willing to serve you, then I love you. You understand? If I tell my wife, oh, my dear wife, I love you so much. She said, my dear Prabhu, I'm sick tonight. Can you kindly wash the dishes? Well, I have to go to bowling tonight. I'm sorry. Do the dishes yourself. You see? Is that love? No. That's selfishness, greediness, you see? My bowling night. Bowling is nonsense. Why do you want to go bowling anyway? You're going to let your wife stay there in her sick, feverish condition and make her wash the dishes? That's not love. Love means service. You know what happened? There was one godbrother, he got sick. He was very sick. And devotees didn't say, well, we don't want to get close to him. We may catch it. No one even took care of him. Shamasunjam. And he told Prabhupada about it. Prabhupada was really disturbed when he heard that. He said, why didn't you tell me? I would have personally taken care of you in your sick condition. Prabhupada told him. You see. So devotee relationships. Well, if you don't have loving relationships with devotees, you are nowhere spiritually. You're nowhere. So we have to cultivate nice relationships with devotees. It's very important. You see, between husband and wife, parents and children, guru and disciple. Every layer relationship, God brothers, God sisters, every layer relationships, all the way up and throughout the whole social strata of ISKCON. Nice relationships, and we have to also have nice relationships with the jivas also, who are outside of our movement. Because we are meant to try to liberate them and help them come to Krishna consciousness. So we have to have compassion for them also. So anyway, these questions have been very nice. And it's 9 o'clock. And I have to get up at 3 in the morning so I can wake the Lord in the morning. So we don't want to go too late here. But if there's some really good questions, I'll be convinced to stay a little longer. But after the questions are gone, then I'm gone. I want to know about relationships. I just told all about it. Anyway. Guru-Krishna relations, devotee-devotee relationship, guru-disciple relationship. Well, Krishna says, I know devotees, there's a very nice verse, I don't remember the exact shloka, but he's saying, devotees are my heart. Krishna sees the devotees, his very heart and soul. There's no one more dear to Krishna than his devotees, you see. And so the spiritual master, he has a very, how do we pray? Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutade Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Samaniti Namane. That I offer my respectful obeisances unto his divine grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, who is very dear to Lord Krishna on this earth, you see. Guru is very, very dear to Krishna. He is Krishna Priya. He is very dear to Krishna. So, that's if you can become dear to that person who is very dear to Krishna, you see. And Krishna will recognize you also. That's why we need Guru, because Guru is very dear to Krishna. He is most dear to Krishna. And if we can become dear to the one who is dear to Krishna, then we also become dear to Krishna. That's why Guru is so important, you see. Because otherwise we have no access to Krishna. Devotee-devotee relationships, I just spoke at length about that. Guru-disciple relationship, I just mentioned that, I covered them. So anything else? Yes?
I have something about Lord Shiva. Question.
Yes?
Why does he wear the skulls, and whose skulls are those?
Why does Shiva wear all those skulls? And why does he smear his body with ashes from the crematorium and all those kind of things? I don't know. But I know that Gorkhasharadas Babaji used to sit by the latrine so nobody would bother him in his bhajan. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if it's the same reason. But I know he was being bothered by so many materialists who were coming wanting material blessings. He finally just went for the place with the most horrible stench that nobody wanted to even come there. And that's where he would do his bhajan, just to be relieved. Now, I don't know if it's the same thing with Lord Shiva. No, I can't say. Has anybody ever read in Prabhupada's books why he puts the skulls?
Bhakti Charu Maharaj in his seminar was saying that because Lord Shiva is so loving by nature, each skull, like when Sati gave up her body, that represents the different Satis. And he was explaining how Lord Shiva remains, but even Sati her body is temporary, and that one is actually reciprocation of Lord Shiva's.
I can't quite hear, but what is he saying?
He says it's a love for Sati. Because Sati gives up the body and Lord Shiva remains, so each time different forms of the Sati that has skull remains.
Those are different forms of Sati?
That's what's explained. Yeah. That's what explained by Bhakti Charu Maharaj.
Sati? Different forms of Sati.
Then the past time when Sati gives up.
Yeah, different the past time. When Sati gives up the body.
But her body was completely burned in the fire. There was no skull left. Anyway, we can ask Bhaji Srimaj for more information. It's an interesting question. Or if you become a pure devotee, you can ask Lord Shiva directly. Hey, why are you wearing those skulls? Anything else? Everybody's satisfied now? Ready to cultivate pure bhakti? We just had our pure devotional service seminars. Very wonderful seminars, studying the nectar devotion in detail. So anything else? If not, we'll stop here. And we thank you very much for your participation in this Krishna consciousness movement. We appreciate each and every one of you that you have come tonight to give your evening for Krishna. Thank you very much. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.